Welcome to the Food Revolution Summit, where we explore how you can heal your body and your world with food. This is Ocean Robbins, and I am joined by my dad and colleague, John Robbins, in welcoming our guest and our dear friend, Doreen Virtue. It was an extraordinary scientist, Albert Einstein, who once said, "I believe in intuition and inspiration. Imagination is more important than knowledge, for knowledge is limited, whereas imagination embraces the entire world, stimulating progress, giving birth to evolution. It is, strictly speaking, a real factor in scientific research." So it's with great respect for science and for the scientific method that we are now entering into an interview that lies more in the realms of wonder and imagination, intuition, and inspiration. Doreen Virtue holds 3 university degrees in counseling psychology, with formative expertise in the treatment of addictions as well as in child abuse recovery. Her background led her to an understanding that for many people, the road to recovery from trauma and illness, and indeed also the road to changing habits to step into greater health, can be profoundly supported by opening to powers that lie beyond our usual consciousness. If you are interested in living your life and directing your consciousness in a way that helps you to be available to insight, wisdom, and support, then I think you're going to love hearing from Doreen Virtue. Doreen is the best-selling author of more than 50 books, including Eating in the Light, Losing Your Pounds of Pain, Constant Craving, What Your Food Cravings Mean and How to Overcome Them, and Healing with Your Angels. She's been a frequent guest on Oprah, CNN, The View, and many other shows, and she writes a weekly column called My Guardian Angel for a Woman's World magazine. So now, Doreen, my dad and I are fascinated by your work, and we're so grateful to have this time with you. And now, for this interview, I'm going to hand it over to my dad, John Robbins.
Well, thank you, Ocean, and thank you, Doreen, for being with us today.
It's my great pleasure, and hello, everyone. With great respect for whatever path of eating you're on, I think all of us are in this together.
Yes, I agree with that, and for that, I want us to understand that ever more deeply. When I first discovered your work, Doreen, I felt a light go off inside me, and it was as though it was saying, there's wisdom here that could help a lot of people. So I'm really glad you're with us today.
Thank you, me too. Food has always been a part of my journey. When I was a little girl, my mom worked for Weight Watchers as a counselor. And so we grew up on, you know, what at that time was considered very healthy food. My parents are lifelong vegetarians, and so to us, a really special meal was swordfish back before it cost what it costs today and before the sustainability was a word. And so I've always been really food conscious, and it's no surprise that when I went to college to study psychology and chose a specialty, it was eating disorders. And so for a long time, I was a director of an inpatient and also an outpatient eating disorder facility, one in Southern California and one in Nashville, Tennessee. And this is where I really started to see correlations with people who had severe, what they call morbid obesity, chronic bulimia, anorexia, and their psychological and also spiritual issues. A lot of them were people who felt lost about what their life purpose was, and they were using food as a numbing agent.
Well, we know that people who've experienced serious trauma are more likely to overeat, more likely to choose unhealthy foods, and less likely to exercise. And they're more likely to eat when they're upset or stressed. As a result, people who've experienced serious trauma are more likely to be overweight and also more likely in this culture to be judged or rejected for their size. And this is quite a vicious cycle, a self-perpetuating cycle.
It is.
It's painful, it's lonely, and it's way too common today. What I want to ask you, Doreen, is as a psychotherapist, you specialized in treating eating disorders and addictions. What is it that people who have experienced serious trauma need to know and to do in order to bring their food world, their food journey, into alignment with their highest good?
What we found was it's really a matter of being honest with yourself and taking an inventory of what your life is like today and what it is you feel guided to be doing. I think most people that I talk with today have this higher calling to contribute to the world, to make a difference while they're here. And a lot of people, unfortunately, feel like they have to work just for money, and they work in fields that they don't find that meaning in, and then they get afraid about their financial security, about making a change. So a lot of the work that I've done is helping people to make that transition to adding more meaning to their life. It's a form of existential psychology. And when they have more meaning, they then have an increase in their self-esteem. And I've seen transformations happen. One woman in particular who was my client, she held three PhD degrees in different modalities, and she had spent her whole life trying to please her parents, who were this, they just were not able to tell her basic things like, we love you, we're proud of you. So she kept chasing after their approval, getting accolades and such. And she came to me because she was about 100 pounds overweight. But that wasn't the real issue. The issue was that she just had rejected herself. And when we really dived into it, what she wanted to be was she wanted to be an artist. She loved painting. She had a talent for it. But she was afraid of her parents' disapproval. They wanted her to be a medical doctor or a psychologist, something what they considered to be a, quote, real career, not an artist. So she'd take art classes to help her to feel better about this. But that wasn't enough. It was a feeling like she was preparing for what she wanted to do instead of doing it. So during therapy, we had her gather up all of her finished paintings and approach a gallery and have a gallery showing. And that was a pivotal experience for her, John, because at that moment, she started to see that it wasn't about her externals, her degrees, her career, or her weight even. It was about doing something that was meaningful to her. And after that, her self-esteem just shot through the roof. She didn't feel like she had to overeat all the time. She had a more healthy relationship with her parents, more honest. And I saw so many healings like that when I was a practicing therapist.
That's very beautiful. And I'm sure that it was a privilege to see that and to be a facilitator of those kinds of experiences. I know many people who can't see how their energy is affected by what they eat. They might eat a hamburger and French fries and a milkshake at dinner and have some pie later that night. And then they wake up the next morning feeling sluggish and maybe headachy. But to them, those are two entirely unrelated events. They don't make a connection between the food they've eaten and how they feel the next day or how they're feeling in the moment right even after they've eaten. And they certainly don't make a connection between the food they eat and their ability to access their true feelings, their inner wisdom. Doreen, what kinds of nutritional practices help us to access our intuition and inner light?
This is a great question, and I really feel like it's different for every person. I'm convinced that we all have a different energy metabolism, and keeping a food diary is probably the best way to be in touch with this. A lot of people groan when I say that. They think that's too much work. If one of the things I've done is I've worked with children who've been labeled ADHD, attention deficit with hyperactivity disorder, and helping them to slow down and have one food at a time. And it takes a few moments, and even the next day, as you said, for you to have that connection to how you feel. But right in the moment when you eat something, you can notice the physiological and emotional reactions of your body. So just like an allergy test, if you eat one thing at a time and then notice things, even like the histamine effect of a lot of foods, so does my heart rate go up? Do I have a flushing or an itching effect? Do I feel anxious now? These are signs that perhaps you are even sensitive or allergic to those foods. And I wrote a book called Don't Let Anything Dull Your Sparkle that really explored the link between additives in foods and the stress hormones that they create, like cortisol and adrenaline and histamine. And we do find that additives, including pesticides and herbicides in foods, increase your stress hormones. And then there's that vicious cycle of feeling anxious, and then people will reach for something to quell the anxiety, including food or or medications or other drugs. And that with the anxiety, then there's that vicious cycle that you talked about earlier. Scientists call it the cobweb cycle. That means that when you feel anxious and you feel socially insecure, and then you go run to food and you gain more weight, and then there's the ostracism as a cycle. We see that tragically so often in people who've had a trauma in their life. And a trauma is defined these days as anything that led to you feeling unsafe or that you might lose your life. And so it used to be that a trauma was defined as being someone who was severely abused or in war. And those are horrible traumas. But now it's opened up, there's thousands of different scenarios that could lead to someone being traumatized and then turning to food. And often the wrong kind of foods. As you mentioned earlier, the studies showing that people will turn to junk food and chemical-laden foods. So in answer to your question, we want to get off of the chemicals, the preservatives, even the processed foods as much as possible. We're finding that the simpler, the better, just getting back to basics.
Are there specific foods and maybe beverages that you have found boost your natural intuitive abilities as well as your physical health?
Absolutely. What we've found is that foods that are picked fresh, locally grown, are the highest in energy. Anything that's been frozen or processed in any way, the life force has gone out of it. I mean, we couldn't live in a microwave or a freezer, and neither can the life force of foods. So freshly picked, and then organic foods have the highest life force. Because after all, what does pesticide mean? It means kill. How low of a life force is that? And in terms of stress hormones, we find that that apples, organic apples, actually are a very high nutrition content, and they don't have that boost of histamine that some of the fruits and vegetables can trigger in people who are trauma survivors who already have too much histamine in their system. If you could go to your local farmer's market co-op, or even better, grow your own organic apples, you'd have nature's medicine right there.
You would. And I think a lot of our listeners are trying to move in the direction you're describing. And they want, many people want to learn how to correctly read their own intuition about what their body needs and what they should eat. And learn how to honor their unique biochemical individuality and metabolic individuality. Doreen, how can people tell the difference between true intuition, that's reliably indicating what your body needs and wants, and false guidance, that is actually habitual, emotional, or addictive eating patterns masking themselves as intuition?
Great question. And it is important to tease out this difference. It does take practice. And I liken it to when you answer the phone, and this kind of goes back before caller ID, but if you answered the phone, within 1 second, you know whether it's a loved one or a telephone solicitor. And with practice, you get to know the difference between your wishful, kind of willful thinking, even a lower energy, or your true intuition. And this is how my diet changed, John. I was someone who was very headstrong and willful and wanted to do things my way. And I had very strong intuition to change my career and such, and I just ignored it. And one day I was going to an appointment. This was July 15th, 1995, in Anaheim, California, and I had this very strong intuition to tell me to put the top up on my convertible car. And it was such strong energy, you know, such a strong message. But the motor was broken on my electric car, and so the top was down permanently at that point. I went to the appointment, and I was spotted by these two men who were going around Anaheim carjacking cars. And so I was their third carjacking victim that day. Luckily, I survived. They had a gun and a knife. I'm here. You know, I'm alive today. And it was an ordeal. It was a trauma for me.
Yeah.
I got out of it because I finally listened in that moment that it was happening to what my intuition told me to do. And after that, I was so humbled. I mean, there's nothing like a brush with death to change your life. And that's when I started to listen. And so I started to make the time to get quiet, you might call it meditation, and really ask questions like, what changes should I be making? And in meditation, so clear, I heard that I needed to go vegan. And I had never heard of this before. I mean, this was in 1996. I think your book was the only book out there that was talking about veganism. So Diet for a New America, it was called at that point, was, you know, my Bible. And I talked to some other people who were vegan. I had no idea what I was doing nutritionally until then. But what I was told was the pain of the animals as they had suffered was affecting me, that I was absorbing that when I was eating their products. And I'd never given that any thought before. I was a Southern California child who didn't eat red meat because you didn't do that for weight control. That was the only reason that people in Southern California didn't eat red meat at that time, because it was considered fattening. But I ate a lot of chicken and turkey because that was considered diet food, typical Southern California weight-conscious girl. And so I went vegan, and what I noticed was my whole life changed, that I no longer had headaches, because I'd been having headaches, and I had so much more energy. And most of all, I had this clarity of thought where I could keep my mind focused. And I just learned that if you check in with your intuition regularly, you know, some people do it by gardening or going out on nature hikes. Some people take formal meditation classes. It really doesn't matter how you do it, but that we create that quiet time. Get off of the electronics, get away from noise, and really go within and say, what's my truth? And it clicks. You can feel it. That's the truth. You might even get goosebumps as you get it. And it's similar to epiphanies. Once we do that, we know that that's true guidance. Where false guidance comes in through the noise and is always espousing things that are ego-based, like, oh, this will get you quick riches, or this will get you famous, you know, all ego kind of messages, where the true voice of our inner intuition, our inner wisdom, is always about how we can improve something. It's very selfless service-oriented.
Well, when you had that epiphany to go vegan and learned about the way animals are treated in modern factory farming, I've written about that a lot, obviously, in Diet for New America and elsewhere. I think the way we raise cattle and cows and pigs and chickens and turkeys today for industrial meat, it's so spectacularly cruel that you don't have to be a vegetarian. You don't have to be an animal rights advocate. You don't even have to be a particularly empathic human being to be appalled, to be abhorred by it if you actually see what's done. It's that extreme.
It's really extreme. I traveled the world for 25 years talking about intuition and spirituality and veganism. And I retired 2 years ago, and Michael and I got land where we now rescue animals who are going to slaughter. We have 140 of them now, including a lot of boy cows, because a lot of people don't know that cows have to be pregnant to give dairy products, and that boy cows are kind of thrown away. And so we rescue them and neuter them and keep them here, as well as lambs that were on their way. We just rescued that were in the wool industry, and I didn't know this, but lambs that don't give enough wool are sold to slaughter. So we brought them here and neutered them, and we're going to keep doing that. We have close to 50 acres. We have lots of room for all these animals, and it's so enriching and fulfilling, because these animals are some of the nicest people I've ever spent time with.
Yes. You know, Jon Stewart, the famous from The Daily Show, comedian and social critic, and I think philosopher of our times, actually. When he retired from The Daily Show, he and his wife started a farm sanctuary like you're describing on their property.
It's really fulfilling. I've probably never done anything that's so meaningful in my life. And we will keep doing this till the end of our life. In fact, we set up a trust account so that, God forbid, if anything happens to us, the animals will be taken care of, because they are amazing. We've learned so much from them about just being present in the present moment and how to be happy in a very simple way.
I want to ask you a question again. I asked it earlier. You answered it very well, but I want to ask it in a different way, because I think it's just important enough to bear in some ways repeating or looking at from different perspectives, really. Just about everyone I've spoken with about this will recall times in their lives where their intuitions turned out to be uncannily accurate. And you mentioned picking up a phone. The phone rings and they know who's calling before they answer it, and without caller ID. But there's also the possibility that we can be wrong. And most of us have memories of times that we were. We can feel certain about something. We can feel guided in a certain direction, but later come to see that something was amiss, that what we thought was inspiration was really just wishful thinking. So I want to ask you to reflect again on how can we tell whether what we're intuiting is true guidance that warrants our trust, or whether it's false guidance that could lead us astray?
Well, I absolutely agree. This is such an essential question. And I've found in teasing that out in hindsight with people and with myself that every time it's false guidance, there's two things. There's a red flag that we overlook. And I find this a lot when I do relationship counseling with people who got into a relationship they later regret, and they thought at the outset, this is the one. And when we look back on it, we always find that there were signs and red flags that they chose to ignore. And once they do that, then they see that their intuition was accurate. They got all the messages. They just didn't listen to them. There's a difference between hearing and listening, as you know.
Yes.
And then the second thing is false guidance always has some form of self-aggrandizing part of it. There's something that's trying to boost you as a separate person better than others. So what we can think is intuition is really the ego disguising itself as a little whisper that says, this will get people to like you. This will help you to feel loved. And so the ego always talks about externals that will make you be loved, where the intuition knows that you're already loved. That in spiritual truth, we're all loved. And so we don't have to chase after anything externally. The intuition is always about some service that you can perform. And boy, I've had that happen in my own life a lot, where I've looked back and kind of almost embarrassed with some of the detours that I took. But you know what? We learn from all of them, don't we? I mean, there's nothing that's wasted when we have it be a learning opportunity.
Yes, and I often think when I've made a choice that's led me into pain, well, let this pain not be in vain. I mean, how can I learn the most that I possibly can from it, given that it's here, that there's suffering, and that I have played a part in creating it? How can I see that part most clearly? How can I own that most fully?
That's a great way to look at it. I love that. That would be a good book title for you, Let This Pain Not Be in Vain. I love that.
Thank you. You know, I'm thinking about something you and one of your co-authors wrote in one of your books, and it's something I think is quite true. You wrote, by consuming dairy products on a regular basis, you reduce your ability to clearly hear your inner voice. Cheese is a concentrated form of milk that can quickly block your psychic abilities. If you've been struggling to connect with your angels, check your cheese intake. When you release cheese from your diet, your intuition is instantly heightened.
It's so true. That quote came from about 7 or 8 years of working with people in very small settings of 14 people at a time, helping them to unblock their intuition. And this is a group of professional people. These were medical professionals and business people who knew that a lot of success comes from having that clarity of intuition. And so working with them, we found the correlation that those who ate the cheese a lot, it was the equivalent of putting cheese over your eyes and complaining that you can't see. And then the grease from the dairy products was the equivalent of having grease on your windows. And once we had them make that shift to plant-based dairy-like products, which it's such a wonderful time right now to be plant-based, because there's all these beautiful nut-based and plant-based products that really do a good job of mimicking cheese and other dairy products. So we'd have them switch, and the difference was amazing. I mean, even during the 3 days we'd spend together and they'd be eating vegan meals every day with me, the shift by the third day was measurable, where they were seeing things and hearing things that we could validate as helpful and accurate.
So their inner vision got clearer, their access to their inner light got brighter?
Mm-hmm, much so. Yeah, cheese was the number one, followed by too much caffeine, was the second one. And the reason was because of the anxiety, the jitteriness that too much caffeine can create. So when we'd have them detox to herbal tea, we'd also see a similar effect of more clarity with the intuition, but also regular type of thinking, you know, more analytical, logical, left brain thinking. They were able to focus, and their minds wouldn't wander and waver so much.
So their overall cognitive abilities were enhanced.
Increased, much so. Mm-hmm. And then they were pleased. And then when you see the benefits, you don't feel sorry for yourself that you're losing something. You see that you're gaining something.
I would say, you know, you mentioned the plant-based dairy-like products that are available today. I've seen a lot of people move away from dairy products and they make their own almond milk.
Yes.
Or they eat hummus instead of cheese, or mm-hmm. they eat foods like dark green leafy vegetables or tahini to make sure they get plenty of calcium. It's very important, whether you're vegan or not, to eat a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables that are across the color spectrum. Eat lots of different colors, and to eat lots of healthy seeds and nuts and whole unprocessed foods, organic if possible. And speaking of organic, I remember reading that you changed your family's diet to organic.
Yeah.
You had two sons. They were about 13 and 15 years old, I think.
Yeah, that's right. So this was, again, for meditation back in 1996. So this was way before you had Whole Foods or any of the organic markets around. And I was told in meditation to go organic. And it wasn't, they didn't use the word organic because I probably wouldn't have recognized that term, but that I was given a list of chemicals to stay away from. And so my sons and I, as a single mom at the time, we would go around reading labels, and I actually would pay them $1 a day to not eat these chemicals. So it became kind of a game for them, which they enjoyed. And to this day, my sons are mostly vegetarian. I mean, mostly vegan, more vegetarian. They do eat fish. But they don't eat any, red meat or fowl or anything like that. But they're very health conscious because of me giving them the allowance and making it a group process. One of the things that I've written about, I think that you're talking about, is they were teenagers, so they were normal rowdy boys. And being a single mom, I was having difficulty with their energy. But when I switched all of us to organic foods, there was this softening and gentling effect that was so apparent. And I stopped getting the phone calls from school that were calling me in for conferences, and they stopped fighting between themselves. There was just this gentleness that took over, which, again, I was winging this based on meditation and doing my best to make it healthful and nutritious. But the results raising organic teenagers was amazing.
Wow, that is something that I'm sure a lot of our listeners would love to be able to do. Sometimes teenagers they need to individuate, they need to differentiate. They're at a stage of life where their locus of identity is shifting from the family to the greater world. What their peers say, do, and think takes on tremendous importance. And they sometimes get pulled into things that are normalized in our culture that are toxic for them.
Very much so. And again, pesticides, kind of circling back to that, is such an aggressive intention to kill. And so no wonder when we ingest it, we get aggressive. And that includes highly hormonal teenage boys. So take the boys off the pesticides and you'll see the difference like I did.
Their hormones come into balance and they come into a more gentler relationship to their own life force, which is so powerful at that stage.
It was helpful to them. And I saw them be able to focus. Their grades went up. Their amount of aggression went down. It was remarkable, and it actually helped to reinforce me staying on that diet. And at that time, finding organics, no easy task in 1996. But I started talking to my grocery store manager about carrying organics, and as long as people bought it, he was very happy to supply it.
Sure. You know, I'm thinking back to when I was a teenager. I ate a lot of ice cream.
I can imagine with your family.
Yes, my father was the owner of Baskin Robbins, and 31 flavors. I ate 31 flavors of ice cream every month, and you know, my experience was that eating ice cream provided a lot, really a lot of momentary pleasure, but it made me feel heavy. It shut me down emotionally. It created static in my mind. It made me less aware and less conscious. And Doreen, I wonder if we are sometimes drawn to foods that will shut down our psychic abilities because we're not ready yet, or we haven't yet learned how to use them wisely.
It's so interesting that you bring that up, John, because when I first posed the question in prayer one day, I was a young mother, and this was when the boys were really young, and I was in my 20s, and I prayed. I said, "What is my life purpose?" And whenever you ask that question, your whole life changes. For anyone listening who hasn't asked that question, let me warn you, if you ask the universe or God or whatever your orientation is, what's my life purpose, you will get the answer. And so I immediately got the answer intuitively that it was to write books and be a speaker and go on television, et cetera. And that intimidated the Jesus out of me. I was so intimidated. I thought, can't I just give blood, was my real thought. You know, I didn't think that I was supposed to be a public figure. I was very introverted. And so every time I would get this message, I would turn to ice cream. And I would just, when the kids were in bed, I would sit in front of the TV watching some old show, just kind of junk food show, and eating right out of the gallon container.
I did that too.
Okay, so you understand. And I just sat there in front of the TV, and I remember one night in particular, I said, "I'm in heaven. I have the house is quiet, the boys are asleep, I've got this delicious ice cream that was kind of melting on the sides, and this fun TV show." And all of a sudden, I had this shudder of self-honesty and awareness, and I thought, I'm not in heaven, I'm in hell. I'm in my self-made hell. I had put on 50 pounds eating all this ice cream since that epiphany that I was supposed to be a writer. And I could see that I would keep going. And I had this feeling like I was throwing my whole life away. So I took that gallon of ice cream and I put it right in the trash, and I put junk on it so I wouldn't dig it out of the trash. And the next day, I got out my typewriter. I'm dating myself, but that's what we had back then. This is in the 80s, and started writing and haven't stopped since.
Well, and we're all fortunate that you made that shift and that you haven't stopped since, because so many of your books have made so much difference to so many people.
Thank you.
I want to talk with you a little bit about alcohol. We know that drinking alcohol excessively can degenerate into very serious addictions with the devastating social, economic, and health consequences. I've read something that you wrote, that alcohol can weaken the aura and allow negative energies to come in.
Well, what I do know is a fact is that fear energy is bored by happiness energy, and fear energy has no attachment to anyone who's happy and well-rounded and has a whole life there that's meaningful. So the safest thing that anyone can do is to be happy in a natural way. One of the best things that I ever did was follow my intuition again that told me that my drinking was interfering with my happiness. I would drink wine every night to make myself go to sleep. And in the morning, I would tank up with the strongest coffee I could find. And I would drink coffee all day long. And no wonder I needed wine to turn that off at night. And I was caught in this vicious cycle. And I didn't know how I'd get out. But it was simply a matter of, for me, agreeing to commit to sobriety and being chemical free. And so that was that same year, 1996, that I went vegan and organic. I also went chemical free. I haven't had coffee since 1996. And I always joke that I've saved so much money because I've never, ever bought a coffee at Starbucks, which is so expensive. You know, I probably bought a house from all that I've saved. And it's, you know, a lot of people don't want to hear this. And they tell me, well, what about moderation? And I think that everyone has to follow their own intuition. If you're getting the feeling that alcohol or caffeine or some other chemical is interfering with your peace of mind, take a look at it and experiment with going off of it. Experiment how you feel without chemicals versus with chemicals. Everyone I've worked with always finds that being chemical-free is a path of true and lasting peace and happiness. And I also think it's a youth secret too. My gosh, I'm almost 60 and I feel younger now than I did when I was 17 years old. And I'm flexible, you know, I do yoga and run around with the animals. And I think that a lot of it is from taking care of our bodies. Don't you?
I do. And I'm glad you're feeling so well and healthy. And I agree that taking care of our bodies and our minds and watching our thoughts and owning our feelings and expressing them in a positive way and choosing our food carefully, there's so many things that keep us young and keep us alive and keep us vibrant. Now, about alcohol, I am aware that in Alcoholics Anonymous and other 12-step programs, the concept of God or a higher power plays a critical role. The 12 steps include statements like, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And also, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. Doreen, have you found that people who have had addiction issues, be they with alcohol or with food, have been helped by finding ways to connect with their higher power?
Well, absolutely. In fact, there's many studies that correlate prayer of many different types of prayer, supplication, affirmation prayers, different denominations. They correlate prayer with the reduction or even elimination of addictive cravings. And that was certainly true for me when I was a teenager. And I was at one point running around with the wrong crowd and we were smoking marijuana and drinking. My mother, who's very, very spiritual and religious, started praying for me. And I woke up one day and I just had no desire for marijuana ever again. And so that was a long, long time ago. I did continue with the wine. And for me, prayer helped me to have no desire for it. So I'm a big believer in whatever spiritual path that you're in, whatever you believe in, whether it's a higher power or God or universe, reaching up to that higher level gives you strength and also gives you solutions. For me, if I have no cravings for something, then it's not a problem. It's no big deal. I don't believe in using willpower as fighting against cravings. I think that's a recipe for a relapse. But what I do believe in is surrendering to your higher self, which wants health. I mean, that's your true natural state, is to be healthy and chemical free. And we can do this safely. And a lot of it has to do with leaning on that higher power.
When you speak of leaning on our higher power, I'm thinking about how when we're going through trying times, if we're having trouble with an addiction or with any other deep challenge in our lives, it seems that many of us want to believe in benevolent spirits, in angels, in spirit guides, in the possibility of help from ethereal realms. Today, polls show that nearly 70% of Americans do think that angels exist, and that number seems to be growing. Now, some people say this upsurge of belief represents wishful thinking, but I think it's far more likely that we're remembering something that's already been known deep inside of us, and that the difficulties and the challenges of our lives and of our times are bringing an inner knowing to the surface that can help to guide us.
Oh, yes, John, absolutely. There's no question. Try asking for help, and whether you want to ask for help from your higher self or God or Jesus or Buddha or the universe, it's just that reaching up to pure love and wisdom, and watch what happens. And with that experiment, a lot of people then create their own belief and knowing that we're not alone, that we have a lot of support that's always been there, but we needed to ask because they respect our free will.
Needing to ask is hard for some of us. We've learned not to ask for what we need and want. Somehow we've come to even be ashamed that we need or want anything.
That's true. It's like if you ask, you're weak. So, and do you think that men more than women would believe that?
I do. I think men, we're conditioned to be strong and unafraid and fix everything and fix everybody. I don't think the women in our lives always appreciate that. And it takes us, it makes us into machines and makes us value our performance more than our hearts. It's really dangerous, actually.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of the old adage, there's no atheist in a foxhole. And like you were talking about earlier, John, when you're in a situation where you're hitting bottom and life is really dark and you can't see the way out, that's when a lot of people go on the spiritual path and they have no other choice. They might start it out rhetorically saying, if anyone's there, please help me. But that's enough. Because what I've learned is God and Jesus, the angels, whoever you appeal to, respect our free will choices, including our free will choice to have a miserable life. They would wish what other for us because they love us, but we have to ask. And it doesn't matter how we ask, but that we do ask.
Sometimes I look around, I think our whole country has one huge eating disorder. More than 60% of the calories we eat come from ultra-processed food. We eat meats and dairy products that come from animals whose entire lives have been nightmares of suffering.
Yeah.
The average American consumes more than 150 pounds of refined sugar every year. More than two-thirds of us are overweight or obese, and those numbers keep climbing.
Well, it's true, and you and I have both traveled worldwide. We see it everywhere we go. And some places we see healings. We see some countries that are banning genetically modified foods, and we see places like in Germany, there's all vegan grocery stores now everywhere. It's called Vegans. And so there's hope for the world. I see this. I see, you know, stars like Leonardo DiCaprio really helping to increase awareness, and Mark Ruffalo, of the ecological issues. But you know what I've found? And this is really hard to admit because this is research I've been doing since even before I went vegan in 1996, is that a lot of people will be told that eating sugar leads to diabetes and animal products lead to cancers and heart attacks and the China study and everything. But they kind of push that away. And they don't pay attention to it. They think, well, that's in the future. I don't have to deal with it. But the number one thing that I found people pay attention to is their personal looks. So interesting. It pushes a button with them. So it's similar to when there was campaigns to stop cigarette smoking and people were told cancer and, you know, birth disorders and such. And people were saying, yeah, yeah, yeah. But when they finally came out with studies that smoking leads to wrinkles, and such bad smells that you push away potential partners, people paid attention. And I think that with eating disorders, we're finding the same thing. And there's amazing studies that show that eating chemicals increases your weight, particularly in your stomach, by increasing cortisol, and also leads to wrinkles. So I think a lot of the healing is going to be on the vanity plane. And it's unfortunate because that's so ego-based, but that's what's going to work is when you see those before and after photos, that's where I see people really taking notice is they see how much your skin clears up and your people's gray hair sometimes reverses back to color and they look so young and they act young and they feel young. I think eating well is the fountain of youth, and it's always been in front of us, and it's even in the Bible in some places. You know, in Genesis, it said God gave us the fruits and the seeds, and that shall be your meat. And I think we're rediscovering that truth. Don't you?
I do, and that's why we do this work. And, you know, I think we have the capacity to conduct our lives and our thoughts and our choices in a manner that makes us more available to what keeps us young and what gives us vitality and vigor and vim. And we still grow older, but we do it in a wholly different way and with a lot more joy and happiness. And we look better. And
yeah, I think so.
And we feel better. Doreen, I really want to thank you for many things, for helping us to understand some of the ways we can align ourselves with the great healing powers within us. For your voice, I experience your voice, your message as grounded and kind and beautiful and true. And I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you also, of course, for being with us today and for all that you're doing.
Well, thank you. God bless you and Ocean for all that you're doing. And everyone who's listening, thank you for taking the time to really listen, not only to John and myself, but listen within to your own inner voice. It'll tell you the truth.
Yes, it will. And we've been talking here with Doreen Virtue, best-selling author of more than 50 books, including Healing with Your Angels, and world-renowned expert on addiction recovery and on the role of consciousness in health and in happiness. Doreen, your work is helping millions of people to activate their higher powers and to create more conscious, more loving, and more meaningful lives. We want to thank you so much for your wisdom, for your insights, and for your partnership in the food revolution.
Thank you both very much. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
This concludes our interview, but our work is just getting started. If you feel excited by what you just heard and you want to share it with other people in your life, if you want permanent access to 24 more amazing presentations and transcripts, then check this out. You can get a download and a transcript of the entire Food Revolution Summit, plus a huge collection of bonus ebooks, courses, trainings, recipes, and videos. And this empowerment package is available for a huge 50% discount between now and the end of the summit. For more information, please visit foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Again, that's foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Thank you so much for joining us in the Food Revolution.